Welcome everyone to another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. Team Canada, 8 medals at the Olympics thus far. We just won another gold medal not that long ago. All of them women so far. So Team Canada's women stepping up to the plate, getting it done over in Tokyo 2020. Big round of applause and shout out to you ladies over there for holding it down. Today on the episode, we're going to talk all things hoops. We've got two great guests lined up for you guys and girls. Up first, we've got Wes Brown from the Monday Morning Scouting Report to talk all things NBA draft. That is going on this week. Going to see who is selected number one overall. Wide open draft this year. Lots of movement possible. Teams trading up, teams trading down. Could be a very eventful night on Thursday. So we deep dive into some of the prospects. Who could be going where, dark horses, risers, fallers, people stay away from, and who Wes thinks could be going to the Toronto Raptors at number 4, if they do indeed pick there. Then we're sitting down with Sportsnet's Haley McGoldrick, who is covering Tokyo 2020 and specifically women's basketball. So talking Team Canada with her. Kia Nurse and the ladies over there have already opened their tournament. They've got one game under their belts. They unfortunately dropped that one in a nail biter to Serbia, but still a pathway for them to reach the podium. So we deep dive into their roster, what's different about the team this year versus previous iterations of Team Canada, and the future of women's basketball here in Canada. So jam-packed episode, lots of hoops content coming your way. So without further ado, let's get right into it here. Up first, Wes Brown. The NBA draft is right around the corner, so what better time to bring on friend from the Monday Morning Scouting Report to pour over some prospects. Happy to welcome back the one and only Wes Brown. How are you doing today, bud?
Good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So draft is slated for Thursday, July 29th. Obviously a busy time of year for you. You're probably sick of staring at prospect lists and spreadsheets and this, that, and the other, and ready to finally see where people go. So if we're just looking over the prospects as a whole, though, like how does this draft class stack up to last year's?
Oh, I think this draft class has a lot more certainty. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're looking at the top of the draft, right, you have guys like LaMelo Ball, you know, you have Anthony Edwards. These guys were good prospects, but they weren't really number one type prospects because there wasn't really a baseline to who they would be, right? And LaMelo Ball obviously has panned out and Anthony Edwards might as well. But when you have a guy like Cade Cunningham, for example, who's 6'7", 6'8", you know, can shoot, can create his own shot, can make others better, and has a more reliable style of game, a more NBA style of game, it's an easy guy to project that he's going to be at least very good, right? And you have a guy like Suggs, who's a winner and won every game until the last game. So you know his skill level and his winning acumen will translate, right? You have a guy like Mobley, who's 7 feet and can do a bit of everything. His baseline's pretty high, right? At worst, you can kind of have him on in a number of actions, no matter what type of offense or defense you or the other team are playing, you know? So you have guys that, and then you have Green, who's a superstar athlete and a superstar type scorer that maybe there's question marks, but in terms of his actual ability, like his half court ability is further along than Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards was more of an athlete. So I think this draft is spectacular. And I think there's going to be stars outside of that top four. It's just going to be who will that guy be?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you touched on him already there. Cade Cunningham, presumptive number one pick at the moment. Is there any scenario you can see where Detroit passes on him, or is he already a Piston in your mind?
Well, look, they people can say that the consensus number one is Cade Cunningham. Like the truth is, if you went down to scouts, he's not the consensus number one. I mean, I have Suggs number one, and a lot of people I know have Suggs number one too, and have Suggs like two, maybe on their board behind him. I think he's going to go one. I don't think it's necessarily a sure thing. I'm sure that's what they're going to do because they need some immediate help, and he could come in and probably be their primary guy. But I think it's going to happen, but I don't think just for, you know, the people at home, I don't think it's as obvious as they're making it out to be. I think a lot of people have different guys there at the top.
Yeah. Well, what even is his sort of NBA comparable then? Like, is there a player currently in the league or from the 90s that he's sort of a throwback player to? Like, what do you see him projecting to be long term over the course of his career?
Yeah, the guy I kind of see him as is like a Jason Tatum. Mm-hmm. I think Tatum maybe has a little more of a scoring gene, of an edge to him, like as a killer instinct. He's pretty much a do it all 6'7", 6'8" combo, I would say. I don't think he's a point guard. I don't think he makes others better to that degree. And I think he's more of a guy that kind of creates for himself and is more of a scorer than he is a facilitator. But a guy like Tatum, because he's not like an elite athlete, but he can score from all three levels, skilled shot maker and shot creator, can make and take tough shots, great size, obviously, and uses his size, you know, to his advantage as a mismatch. A little more skilled than Tatum and at a little less size, I would say, and a little less athletic. He's definitely going to be good because of his size and his ability and his shooting. But I think there's probably a limit because he's just not that athletic. And you could say, well, Doncic isn't either, but Doncic is much more creative with the ball and much more creative as a decision maker and a much better passer. So if you want to look at two guys like this type of style, I would say Doncic and Tatum, that type of guy, but I don't think he's going to be as good as Doncic. And maybe he'll be in like that Tatum range as a star that's, you know, not a top tier guy, but pretty good.
Yeah. So lots of unknown quantities sort of in this draft this year. And there's rumblings of teams even shopping picks and looking to move up, down, all around. Like, is this just typical GMs just doing their due diligence at this point and just sort of testing the market as far as, oh, what could the fifth or the sixth pick actually get me? Or do you think that come Thursday night, we're going to see a lot of movement, especially in that top 10 of teams dropping back or trying to hop into that lottery slots there?
Yeah, it's both. I think this year there's going to be a lot of trades. I know a number of picks in the lottery are being discussed, at least. Whether that happens or not is a different story. But yeah, you have to do your due diligence, right? If you're the Raptors and, you know, the right guy doesn't fall to you and you're thinking, okay, this is the next guy on our board, we got to move back. You got to be prepared. Okay, if we trade for six, what can we get? Oh, we can get OKC sixth and 18th pick. Oh, we want to trade for seven. Oh, can we get Golden State 7 and 14? Well, maybe they decline, you know, they say yes, but the 6 and 18 one declines. So then, you know what you're going for. And, you know, if you're trying to move up too, you have to have those deals in order before the pick is actually made so that you can get your guy, right? So I think everybody has to do their due diligence and know what's required in each situation so that they're prepared when things come down to the wire, because it literally comes down to the wire, right? You have your phone, you got to call the opposing team, make the deal, get it done. And then, you know, the 5 minutes they have. So it's pretty complicated actually pushing it through if the deal wasn't already in place, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you just touched on them there. Raptors, they're in an interesting spot this year. They're at number four. And so a lot of different scenarios can sort of play out in those top three picks ahead of them there. So lots of options for them. They've been linked to a variety of players. Barring a trade, though, between now and draft night, which player skill set that could be there at four for them fits best with the type of team that Masai and Nick Nurse are trying to build in Toronto, in your opinion?
Well, Suggs is the guy. Like, Suggs is the guy, not just because I think he's the best prospect in the draft. If you look at the two guys the Raptors have drafted, the two guards, well, VanVleet was undrafted, but Van Vliet, I believe, only lost one game or maybe two in his final year. I think they lost to Kentucky in the Elite Eight, I want to say, something like that. Otherwise, they were, you know, 30-2, something like that. And I believe Malachi Flynn was 25-1 in his final year. So they like skilled guards that can shoot, that can make plays, that can create their own shot, and that defend. And there you got a guy who's not just, you know, a potential Van Vliet or Lowry, like he's a potential superstar. So with his level of athleticism, his ability to make others better, his winning edge, I think that the Raptors have obviously proven that they value winner. And when you put that with his athleticism, his character, his demeanor, plus the upside he has, he's been playing football for 6 months of the year up until Gonzaga. And he didn't even, like they've said, he didn't even pick up a basketball. So he was all in on football. And you can kind of see the way he processes the game at like a quarterback. The second an opportunity is available, whether it's an outlet, whether it's a play in the half court, he sees it and he can think the game at an elite level. And that includes as a scorer, as a facilitator, everything. So I think he fits the Raptors perfectly. And if they got him, I think they are now not a contender, but a high level team that can compete in the playoffs because they have a winner and B, that go-to guy that can kind of lighten the load off of Pascal and OG and guys like that.
We're a Canadian sports show. You're a Canadian basketball scout. We have to ask about some north of the border prospects here. So number one, do you see any Canadians who are draft eligible this year going in the first round? And number two, who are some names that you might actually hear in the second round or possibly undrafted who will get invited to training camp opportunities and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's a pretty good crop. Josh Primo is going to be a first round pick for sure. Almost certain. I know he's got a lot of interest in the 20 to 30 range, and there's a lot of intrigue. Like I spoke to one scout yesterday. He was telling me he's going to be gone by their pick and they pick in the 20s. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be a pretty high pick. He was a freshman this year at Alabama, 6'5", kind of combo guard, showed he can really shoot it well, but has shown flashes that maybe he can be a point guard. Maybe he can run ball screens. Like, you know, his upside so high as the youngest guy in the draft. He's still only 18. So teams are really intrigued by him. And then there's three Canadians, I would say, that could go in the second round. But I would say all of them are probably close to locks to getting two ways because they're really good, you know. And going undrafted versus being the 50th pick, there's not much of a difference. You know, it's kind of better that you can go choose which team you go to, right? So the three guys are Eugene Omori, who was a senior at Oregon this year, 6'6", kind of three, maybe a four, do it all, really good without the ball, really aggressive, can do a bit of everything defensively as well. So he can switch, I'd say 1 through 4, really strong body, plays really hard and already plays a style of basketball that fits in with the NBA because they've all got their stars and you need to be able to impact winning without touching the ball. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy I know teams are really high on. I don't know if he'll get drafted, but he will definitely get a two-way. He's a guy I'm really high on also. I think he's going to have a long NBA career. AJ Lawson has had an awesome pre-draft experience between the G League combine and then the NBA combine and their workouts, which I've heard have been going pretty well. He's shooting it really well. A 6'6 athlete, super athletic, quick off the bounce. Again, a guy that can do a bit of everything. Shot has really improved, much more a shooter, much more a wing than Eugene is. His ball skills and his pick and roll kind of skills need to improve a little, but he probably projects as at least a 3-and-D guy that showed, you know, he can defend a number of positions. He's just versatile. He just makes things happen again without really needing the ball. And then you've got Dallin O'Banton, who's intriguing. He's a 6'9 point guard out of Nebraska, and he didn't put up great numbers this year, and Nebraska had a pretty rough year, but he is a pass-first point guard, true playmaker, a legit 6'9", pretty athletic, can rebound, can do a bit of everything, another guy, but with the ball in his hands. So he's an intriguing guy whose name is rising. I've heard the Raptors like him. So maybe he gets drafted, maybe he doesn't. But because of the intrigue there, because of his upside as a 6'9 point guard, I think he's for sure going to get a two-way contract as well. So I think all those guys, whether they get drafted or not, are all going to get two ways. And it will result in being a pretty good crop because I think they're guys that can kind of last in the league. They have the size and athleticism package, really, and skill.
Yeah. And every year, I mean, there's risers, there's fallers, there's people who come out of nowhere to all of a sudden shoot up people's draft boards and people who you thought were going to be lottery picks who don't even end up getting selected. So who are some names this year that have stood out to you whose stocks have drastically changed since the end of March Madness to now?
Well, I mean, Davion Mitchell is now slated to be a top 10 pick, right? And before the tournament, he was like getting consideration for late first. Mm-hmm. Maybe a second rounder because again, his upside is kind of limited, but you know, you're getting a guy that can help you right away. AJ Lawson's one of the guys actually that I would say has helped his stock as much as possible. A guy who's fallen out of the first round that I love is Ayo Dosunmu, a 6'5 guard out of Illinois, who won, I think, 15 of his last 16 games before losing in the tournament pretty early on to Illinois Chicago. And another guy I actually love also, Moses Wright, Georgia Tech senior, 6'9", power forward center. Those are two guys that I think have shown that they're winners and that they can fit the NBA in terms of not having the ball in their hands necessarily, but finding a way to impact it, whether it's as a rim runner and rim protector, or as a really good on-ball defender for Dosunmu. Those are guys that I'm really surprised have fallen a little bit. Another interesting one is Corey Kispert. He's been all over the border. He was slated to be a lottery pick pretty early on, you know, in the 10 to 14 range, I would say. And he seems like a name that's slipping, that scouts are saying, well, you know, there's some other shooters in the second round that are pretty intriguing. And maybe the difference between this guy in the first round and those guys is much smaller than we think, but he's nonetheless going to go relatively high. So he's a pretty interesting name. And I think I was just actually mapping it out. There's probably 10 guys, I would say, who are locks for the lottery. And then there's another seven or so names that could go anywhere from maybe 7 to 20. You know, you don't really know. I mean, names all over the board. Some guys have Keon Johnson pretty high. He's a name that seems to be falling. Other people have him at 18 to 20, which is bizarre for the type of athlete he is, right? He tested as the number one leaper, I think, of all time in the combine. It's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens, because I think those top four are probably locked in, despite what the Raptors want you to think. Whether or not they'll be picking there is the thing, because I think they're potentially looking at moving back. And if their guy isn't there at four, it'll be really interesting. I think they know who their guy is and they're going to go after that guy. I just don't know who that guy's going to be.
Yeah. And Masai and company have been pretty good about keeping things tight to the vest and not letting too many leaks slip out over the years. So I doubt we find out much between now and Thursday from the Raptors camp. But yeah, from a personal standpoint, like, who is your favorite dark horse prospect that you have ranked fairly significantly higher than most scouts do right now in this draft?
Yeah, I mentioned the Dosunmu and Wright. The other guy I love actually is Josh Giddey. Mm-hmm. Josh Giddey's a 6'8". We don't really know what his true height is, but 6'8", 6'9" point guard, pass first. When he gets downhill, he's really quick, really fluid off the bounce, elite passer. Like, he's a better passer than Cade Cunningham. They can tell you whatever they want, but he is. And I think his upside is as a star. I think he's going to be a star. So he's a guy I have as in the top five, because I'm certain that he's going to be a player. His dad was a player. He came from that background. He's been born and bred into basketball. He's played his whole life. He's always been a part of the teams his dad was on, you know, like, you know, you'd see those pictures of Steph Curry with his dad, those types of things. Right. And so this guy, it's all he knows and all he's ever done. And he proved himself with pretty good percentages in Australia. They had a game in Vegas against Team USA and against Nigeria. I think he only played in the Nigeria one. He had 14 points in limited minutes. I think his shot needs work, but it's a confidence thing, right? And whereas Ben Simmons maybe is a little afraid to do the work and whatever it is, you know, there's something in there he needs to overcome. I think this kid's made of the right stuff. So I think Giddey's going to be a star, and he has great size. And he's the guy I think the Raptors have a lot of interest in outside of those top four. He's a guy I feel like is a Raptor that they think all we got to do is improve his shot and he's a star. So he's really intriguing. I love Giddey. Love Giddey.
Yeah. And every draft is always full of tons of prospects who are stars at the collegiate ranks, but whose games might not necessarily translate to the NBA level there. So who's someone in your mind who is potentially even a lottery projected pick right now, who you don't think that what they were able to accomplish in college is necessarily going to translate to the pros?
You know, it's really interesting. If you look at like the Baylor guys, both Mitchell and Jared Butler, I think they were really well coached. I think they play really hard, but does it translate to the NBA, or is it a result of their system? Because those guys, they're not elite athletes. They're not the most skilled guys. They do what they do, but their upside is limited, right? Like Butler is a good shooter. He can run ball screens, but he's not an elite athlete. He has some issues. He's had some heart issues that, you know, they're trying to look over. And then Mitchell, you know, for most of the season, I didn't think he was a true point guard. I thought he was more like a two in a one's body. Wasn't a guy that, you know, and when you look at the types of plays that he makes for others, I think a lot of it comes as a result of their offense and running, you know, running, getting advantages created for him. He looked really good in that national final. And I think as a result, teams are going to over-evaluate him or you know, overhype him. But I don't think either of those guys are worthy of that high picks. And I think Mitchell will be a nice player, but I don't ever see him being more than a 3-and-D type guard, right? I mean, he's not Patrick Beverley. He should be better than that. But I think there's an upside. I think there's a limited upside to them. And I think, you know, the more I do this, the more I see that you overlook kind of what the player is and kind of project an imaginary upside, you know. And I've been thinking a lot about Keon Johnson. I've talked over with an NBA friend about, and he's another guy that offensively, he's got really good tools. I mean, his shot needs work, but he can make plays for others. He could get to the rim. He's super athletic. But you got to worry, he, you know, the type of player he was so caught up in a role and wasn't really imposing himself outside of the offense. And, you know, what's his NBA skill offensively? I'm not really sure. So he's a guy that I think is really up in the air. And it's kind of interesting. The trend is looking like it's going what I'm thinking, which is he's not, you know, maybe he's not a top 10 pick because we don't really know offensively what he is, even though he defends well and plays hard. So those are a few interesting names that, I don't know. We're gonna have to see what they become.
Yeah, we'll have to take a look 5 years down the road and see how they ultimately pan out. But yeah. You know, it's not only the prospects who sometimes catch you by surprise, but it's also the franchises as well too, who make some head scratching moves on draft night. So if there was going to be a team that was just going to go rogue in the top 10 and make a sort of off the board pick in that top 10 range there, which franchise is most likely to get a little bit wild, we'll say, in the top 10?
Well, we've seen Sacramento make some crazy picks in the past.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say the Raptors. I heard a story about ties to Kuminga. So I don't know where – I have no idea where they're going. It's been very quiet on the Suggs front. So maybe that means something and maybe it doesn't. But they're a team that doesn't care what anybody else thinks. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're going to try to maximize the value at that fourth pick, right? So if they can get someone at six that they were going to just draft at four, they're going to try to get it, right? But I think they're the team most likely to go off the board. I mean, I could see them taking Kuminga at four. I could see them taking Barnes at four. They do what they think, and they believe in their player development system, and they stick to their guns. I got to appreciate that as someone that, like, that's my philosophy as well. Let's stick to your guns. Get your guy. Go get your guy, whoever that is, right? So I think the Raptors are the most likely team to go AWOL. And like, I don't think they're going to take a guy like Giddey or something like that outside of, you know, I think it would be Suggs or Mobley if whoever's there, Kuminga or Barnes. I think it would be one of those guys if they drafted four, but I can see them going off the board for sure. That's why it's going to be really, really interesting, because they're going to give you a glimpse into their thought process. You know, when they drafted OG and Pascal, these are guys in the 20s. They're thinking, okay, they have a high floor because they're long and athletic, and all we have to do is teach them how to shoot, but their upside is pretty high. But neither of them are natural basketball players, natural skilled guys with great hands or ball skills or any of that, right? Well, here you got a chance at number four. If they take a guy like Barnes, Barnes is the exact same as those two guys, right? And so now you've got, it's great. You got three guys that are long and switchable, whatever, but you need some talent. So it will be really interesting to see, do they go with talent? Do they go with, and the types of players that are available are all over the board, right? Kuminga's a long athlete. He's got character issues, but you can develop it. The complete opposite, Barnes, long, much worse athlete, but elite character. Suggs, super talented, elite character, but smaller. Mobley, a 7-footer that, you know, can do it all. Do they think they can turn him maybe into some type of perimeter player? I don't know. So it's going to be a real glimpse into how they think. So I'm pretty excited to see. And they're very quiet about what they do. Very quiet. I mean,
yeah, eerily quiet coming out of the Air Canada Centre right now, their Scotiabank Place or whatever brand name has their logo slapped on it these days. But yeah. Final prediction before we let you go here. And this isn't, you know, who's going to have the best career or whose ceiling is the highest. But just want to get your feel on which player you think is most ready to make an impact on the NBA in year one. Like, who is the most pro ready to just step into whatever team drafts them? Doesn't matter about fit. Like, who is ready to make that leap immediately?
Suggs. He's going to help you win from day one. Like, no question. He's going to help your team win from day one. And scouts are a little guilty of overexing, you know, like overexing and owing it. Like, oh, his handle's not the best, you know, his ability to create his own shot, forget it. He knows who he is. He's going to work on his lack of skill, right? The great thing about Suggs is he can think the game at the highest level, but his skill level has to catch up to his mental capability. His mental capability is off the charts, but his physical capability isn't there yet. So that's got to catch up a little. But you always think of these guys like Lowry, that when they step on the floor, you know that they're going to help your team win, whether it's taking a charge, whether it's making a play for others, passing it, scoring it, whatever it is, they have their finger on the pulse of the game. And they know when other guys need to get involved. They know where their guys are. They know. And if you watch the way Suggs interacts with Kispert, he gets that guy looks. Look after look after look. Whether it's him setting a screen for him or him outletting it to him the second that opportunity is available. So he makes other guys better like that. So the second he steps into the NBA, he's going to be a stud. No question in my mind. His first game, he's going to help the team win and bring that kind of pressure on the other team that makes them really hard to play because he makes the right decision every time, not the one for himself.
No, it's pretty easy to see that you are a huge Suggs fan there. So let me maybe throw this follow-up question at you there. If you were GM of the Pistons and you had the number one overall pick, would you take him over Cunningham?
Well, I would try to trade to get the most value.
Yeah.
But not even close. Like, to me, it's not even close. It's an obvious, since the first time I watched him, I tweeted it out. Suggs is my early number one pick after I watched him once, because I could see his ability to think the decisions through. And the fact that he's not a scorer, but still takes the right shots because he knows he needs to be able to mold the defense to his whim rather than have them predetermine what he's going to do, right? So when he comes off a screen, the second the opportunity is there, if they're going under, he shoots it. And he doesn't want to shoot it. He wants to make others better, like Lowry, right? It's not in his genes, I don't think, to be that level of scorer, but he's going to do what's necessary to help the team win. And that's what I love. So I would take him number one, no question. And I have other NBA scouts that will agree with that. I can, you know, that agree with me. So
perfect. So you're not alone in that.
I'm not alone. Yeah. I am usually crazy, but this is less crazy than usual.
Yeah.
This is acceptable. At least when he does it, everybody will remember that how hardly I pushed that this was the guy, because I'm more certain of him than any guy I've ever scouted. Like, this is the guy, this is the winner.
Yeah. No, you're hitching your cart to his horse there, and you'll see how far it'll take you. But
100%.
Wes, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us today. For those listening that, again, want to follow you on social media or catch up on any of your articles or rankings or anything like that, where are the best places to find you these days?
Yeah, my website, nbaprospects.com. My Twitter is Wes Blair Brown, and my Instagram is Wes B. Brown. Very simple.
Beautiful. All right. Well, we'll see if your predictions hold true come Thursday night there. And we'll circle back a few years from now and see whether the Suggs hype train pans out or whether it was a love affair destined not to be.
That would be dark. I think I'll be all right.
Before we sit down with Haley to talk all things Team Canada women's basketball, want to remind you guys to check out mybookie.ag, or better yet, head over to dinespressbox.com. Check out some of our content we're putting up there, articles, videos, all that and more. And we've got all the banners that'll take you directly to their website there with pre-populated codes and more. MyBookie has some of the friendliest lines on the internet, and best of all, they've got first deposit bonuses and daily bonuses that you can activate as well all the time too. Just make sure whenever you are making a deposit, use the promo code DYNESPORTS, DYNESSPORTS, no spaces in between, so that they know who sent you. Tonight for our parlay, we're getting involved in the Olympics, folks. We're going to take the Nigerian men's basketball team money line over Germany. Nigeria, as you guys will remember, just finished wrapping up their exhibition series against Team USA's quote-unquote dream team, but seeming more and more like a nightmare by the day as far as their on-court results. So we're going to take Team Nigeria to beat the Germans tonight, money line. Then heading over to MLB because, as always, one of the few leagues that's running during the summer, so we're MLB heavy with our parlays of late. We're going to take the over in the Blue Jays Red Sox game tonight. So over 10 and a half runs. I think it's going to be a high scoring affair. 2-1 payout on that if you want to follow along with us, or you can do your own thing. Just again, making sure we're using the promo code DINESSPORTS for all of your wagers. Must be 18 or older to participate. Problem gambling? Make sure to access all of the online resources at MyBookie to get the help that you need. Only wager what you are willing to lose. Please gamble responsibly. Now, let's get to it with Sportsnet's Haley McGoldrick and talk all things Team Canada women's basketball.
Joining us today, we've got Sportsnet Hoops Insider, Haley McGoldrick. Haley, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Doing very well, doing very well. As a basketball fan, I'm assuming you're probably a little bit tired given the fact that it was a 4:20 a.m. tip-off this morning for the women's team. Did you actually wake up and watch it live, or were you one of the smart ones and you PVR'd it and watched it a little bit later there?
So funny enough, I am doing some work for CBC for these games. So I actually finished my shift at that time. So I basically got home at the time the game was starting. So I didn't need to set
any alarm clocks or anything then. You were already up and raring to go.
Exactly. I'd just finished working 8 hours and covering like field hockey and judo and all those things. So I was just like, why not stay up for an extra hour and a half?
Absolutely. So you're just living on coffee and adrenaline at this point these days, eh?
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of coffee. So much coffee.
So obviously tough loss for Canada this morning, 72-68 versus Serbia. Now, in your mind, was this a case of Canada just being outplayed and the better team won in Serbia? Or did Team Canada not really live up or play up to their potential this morning in the loss?
Oh, Canada, absolutely. And we've seen this before. Like if you watch the Women's America Cup in Puerto Rico, Canada made it to the semifinals, and in Puerto Rico, they fell flat because their shooting just wasn't there. And that's exactly what happened today. Like even Kia Nurse, who had 16 points, you know, she only shot 6 of 18 from the field. Their shooting was under 40% to begin the game. They were shooting less than 30% from the 3-point line. There was one point in the game where they were shooting 11%. They finished the game at 20. And especially for a team where, you know, they're taking those 3-pointers. Bridget Carleton was 0-for-6 from the 3-point line. Neera Fields was 2-for-6 from the 3-point line. You just can't be missing those shots. And they've been over this before because they are a good team. You know, they're going to get aggressive. They're going to get on the boards. That's not a problem. They have people who are going to rebound for them. You know, Kia Nurse was doing it all today. She was scoring. She was getting those minutes as she should. She played really well. But just the scoring, especially when you're shooting as much as a team like Canada does, you know, they do play a bit in the paint, but for the most part, they are a team that's going to shoot the ball. Those shots have to fall, and that's just what didn't happen today.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen it, especially on the men's side on the Team USA there, where you've got NBA superstars who are really struggling to adapt to the FIBA and the international rules. Did you notice anything like that with some of the WNBA players who are maybe used to the rules being enforced in a slightly different manner over in North America, struggling to get their shots down or get to their spots in paint at all there? Or was it just a matter of, hey, it was just a bad shooting day and the refs really didn't have too much of an influence in this game?
Honestly, I think the women have an advantage because like 90% of them go overseas after the WNBA season and they play in Eurobasket and EuroLeague, which are FIBA sanctioned leagues. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that is ever an issue for them because they're usually used to playing under those rules. It just, you know, the shots weren't falling and it's unfortunate, but you know, in the game of basketball, the shots need to fall. You can't be shooting 11% from the three. You can't be shooting 27% from the field. It's just simply unacceptable. Even when, you know, when your bigs are out there and they're only, you know, 2-for-5, like it's just unfortunately that's not how it works. Even, you know, their free throws were looking better, but still, again, that game against Puerto Rico that I keep referencing, that game they shot 50% from the free throw line. This game they shot 65% from the free throw line. It was a 4-point game. If you make 5 more of those free throws, you win that game. Like it's just, you know, because again, they're an aggressive team. They're going to get on the boards. They play good defense. That's not the issue with this team. It's simply making those shots, and especially when fatigue tends to get to them, because, you know, they kind of stayed in that game, and then that third quarter, you know, they came out and they outscored Serbia, but then that fourth quarter, that's literally where they were outscored by 4 points, and that was the difference in the game. So they just need to A, keep their momentum up, and B, they have to hit those shots.
Absolutely. And I mean, with the loss, Canada's kind of now in essentially must win games for the rest of the tournament if they hope to be taking home a medal at the end of the day. So which of their next two opponents in Group A are you most concerned about as far as matchup wise, at least on paper there? Is it Spain or is it South Korea?
It's hard to say. Like Spain obviously is looking good. I mean, I think Dawn Staley said it best when she said, you know, everyone is good in these tournaments. Obviously it's the Olympics, but every game is a must-win game, and already starting off with a loss, although it was 4 points, it's not a great look. And Spain obviously is the top of the table. They beat Korea. So I think Spain is the game that they're going to have to worry about. There's a lot of really good Spanish players. But I think both games, you know, even though it was a 4-point loss and Canada found a way to kind of claw back in that game, simply you can't lose. And we saw them fall flat in the last tournament that they came in. They not only lost in the semifinal, they lost in the bronze medal game. I find this team, they're so talented. They've got a lot of young players. They've got a lot of veteran experience. They kind of are super well-rounded, but it just seems with this team, when they, you know, get the wind knocked out of their sails, they find it really hard to come back from. And in a tournament like this, you just can't have that. So I mean, I'm going to say Spain is probably their toughest opponent, but even Korea, who also has one loss, they're going to be looking for revenge. They're going to be thinking, okay, Canada's a team we can beat, but Canada realistically has a lot of talent. And they didn't have Bridget Carleton or Kia Nurse in that AmeriCup. And so they've got two really good players. They just need to play a bit better. And of course it's the opening game. There's some nerves, there's some rust, you know, this is a team who, again, because they have those young players, they haven't played together for a really long time, whereas some other teams, you know, their starting five or their core have played together for, this is their third, fourth games together. So that is going to be an issue for Canada, but I have hope that they could probably pull a win out over Korea, but Spain is definitely going to be a test for them.
I mean, you mentioned a couple of the players there, and for the casual observer who might not follow basketball in general throughout the year, one name that might stick out is obviously Kia Nurse that they'll recognize. But for those who know, this is one of the more deeper squads Basketball Canada has ever fielded, really, and at least from the WNBA perspective. So who are some other names that viewers can expect to play key roles for this team moving forward outside of, you know, the Bridget Carletons and the Kia Nurses?
Like I said, Neera Fields, she had 19 points in the loss and she came off the bench. She's amazing. She was a huge player in the AmeriCup as well. Shea Cauley is a huge player. A lot of their young talent, like, again, there's a lot of 19-year-olds playing on this team. This is their first Olympics, so they probably, you know, were a bit nervous going into this game. But Leticia Amahir, Leah Edwards, players like that, they're going to make an impact. They're really great two-way players. Leticia especially, she's really good off the glass, but also is really tough in the paint. So she'll be able to get those shots off. They like you said, they are a really deep squad. You know, they're not relying on Kia Nurse. Of course, she had a really good game and they needed her, but they do have those other players. They do have the Kayla Alexanders of the world, who usually, she only played 4 minutes in this game, but usually she's pretty good off the glass as well. You know, Shayna Pellington, she had a breakout tournament during the AmeriCup. You know, I think again today, a bit of nerves. She only played 13 minutes, but those are players that, as the rest of group play goes on, they definitely should keep an eye out for.
Yeah. And I mean, you just mentioned two of the 19-year-olds there, but very young team, obviously, this year. And, you know, Aaliyah Edwards, obviously from UConn, making her Olympic debut. But with so much depth already on the roster and the fact that they've now dropped their opener and are in must win moving forward, like, how much of a role do you see those younger players really having moving forward? Or do you think that because they're in, got to win absolutely everything, they're going to lean more on that veteran presence and some of those rookies are just there to sort of absorb the experience, soak up Tokyo 2020, and then be real contributors, you know, 3-4 years down the line when they go back to the Olympics?
I mean, I definitely think they're obviously on the team for a reason, and they are there because they will make an impact when they get those minutes. Again, I think it was just a bad game for a few players, nerves whatsoever, but they're on the team for a reason. Even if you look at the reserves of the team, like Aislinn Koenig, she's like a 3-point specialist. She's really good from beyond the arc, and she was named as a reserve, and she's 24, but it's just, you know, you're trying to put on the court the five best players who you think are going to win that game. So I think these players, you know, Ellie Edwards only played 16 seconds in that game. She wasn't out there to make a difference. Obviously, they knew that they did maybe need some bigger players, some more experienced players. But, you know, those bench minutes count. When your best players need a break, they can't play the entire game. I mean, Kia Nurse did play 38 minutes because she was on fire. But I know Shea Cauley only played 13 minutes that game, and she scored 12 points. So being able to put out literally any player from the bench makes a difference. You've seen a lot. I mean, just for example, you look at, you know, the 2019 championship Raptors team. The bench mob was the bench mob for a reason, because they outscored every other bench in the league, and that's how they helped win a championship. It's not just one or two players, it's the whole roster. So I feel like Canada is the same in that sense, that as much as those young players, you know, as of right now, yeah, maybe they're only getting 2-4 points a game, even in 13 minutes. They're also playing teams who have 25, 30, 35 year olds who have been in Olympic games before, you know, they were even born sometimes. So I think it's just a matter of time before they kind of come into their own, but they're definitely on this team for a reason. And I'm sure they will see more minutes, especially against a team probably like Korea.
Yeah. And if we look up and down the roster there, all but Fields and Gauthier are from Ontario. So it's almost like a Team Ontario squad going over there and competing in Japan. Now, is this strictly just a numbers thing where obviously Ontario is the most populated province, so it would make sense that they produce the most high-level basketball players? Or is there something different that Ontario is doing that the other provinces aren't, that is yielding more of these high-end athletes who not only become Olympians, but are reaching, you know, the NCAA Div 1 ranks and the U Sports ranks and all of that? Is there anything that's sort of popped up in your time covering the sport that Ontario might be doing that's unique?
I mean, from what I can think of, like, I know there's a lot of academies now. Like, back when I played, there was basically like Jewel and AAU teams. And there was a few in Ontario, but I'm sure there were some in other provinces. But now, like, there's the Nike EYBL, there's Uplay Canada, which is obviously based out of Toronto. Also, just, you know, Toronto being a huge city and a really big place to draw attraction, you've got Raptors and like junior NBA camps that take place in Toronto. You've got like Raptors 905 and development that comes out of the city. So again, it's like the opportunity, like you said, it is a heavily populated province, but also just the funding and, you know, the effort that they're putting in. They really are growing the game in Canada. I've talked to a few players. I've been super lucky to, you know, write stories on Kia Nurse and Bridget Carlton and Naya Rancock-Okunwe. And they all say, like, in the time that they've played, like, Canada basketball has put in so much time and effort into growing the game. But I mean, even Canada basketball, usually when it's not a pandemic, they usually practice out of Edmonton. Like, they definitely take their time and scout across the country. It's not just an Ontario thing, but I think just because of the popularity of the province, you know, cities like Toronto and Ottawa, big cities like that, there's a little bit more opportunity. But I don't think it's just that Ontario plays basketball better than any other province.
Right, right. So Canada is next in action Wednesday versus South Korea, and then Saturday versus Spain. So these games are actually at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So they're not in the middle of the night. We've actually got some prime time slots there, especially given the fact that this year the men's team didn't even qualify for the Olympics. So it's literally all in on the women's basketball side this year. How big of a moment do you think it is for these women to be getting prime time slots and being sort of that focal point of sports coverage this year?
I said on another podcast, it's funny, I said, I think the Canada men's basketball team is the future and has a good future, you know, when Shea's not hurt, when Jamal's not hurt, when they play a bit more together. You know, it was basically a bunch of guys who had either just been eliminated from the NBA finals, didn't make the NBA finals. They're not playing together. They're playing with a whole different group of guys all the time. And then they're thrown together for a 2-week training camp and then going to play against the best in the world. And, you know, a lot of these other guys do play together. You look at a team like, I don't know, say Argentina, for example, a lot of the Argentinian men play in Argentina together versus, you know, on other teams where they're playing against each other a lot of the time. I think Canada basketball for the men have a bright future, but the women's team is the now. They've proved time and time again that they deserve to be up there. They're ranked fourth in the world in the FIBA rankings. Obviously, this wasn't the start they wanted to these Olympics, but they've been working hard to get where they are and put themselves on the map. Canada basketball for women in general is growing. You know, you saw during the Final Four, there were of the Final Four teams, a Canadian on each team because they're growing the sport. It's not just, yeah, USA basketball, like Candace Parker said, probably could field a first, second, and third team who would win silver, gold, and bronze. Like, you know, that's the reality of it. When there's more opportunity available, you know, you obviously have better chances to win and develop and things like that. But I think just the time and effort that they've been putting into growing women's basketball in Canada, that they have been able to, you know, field a team of really good players. And also just the sport itself is growing in Canada because there's opportunity for women to be able to play basketball versus, you know, you only have a house league team that you can play for and you're never going to go to college anywhere because nobody's ever going to scout you. So I've really loved seeing just this team grow and the amount of coverage that they're getting. That's a huge thing too, like the visibility. If you know that there's a Canada basketball game on, you're going to watch it versus, you know, if you can't find it anywhere, you're not going to go see it. So I think that they do deserve their moment and they are having their moment right now, but it's been in the works for a long time. They've been a lot of really good players who have been working their little booties off for years to be able to get this moment. I think people are just on notice now because games are being put on TV, because, you know, social accounts are growing and people look at social media as a form of marketing versus just passively going on Twitter for memes and things like that. So I think this moment has been in the works for a really long time. But like I said, Canada basketball for women, especially like right now, as you had said, was one of the best teams they've ever fielded and they really deserve all eyes on them.
Absolutely. And you just mentioned them there. And obviously Team USA, perennial favorites to take home gold in whatever competition they're in. But maybe outside of the US, who is the biggest threat to Canada taking home gold? Like, who's another country that could really make their mark at Tokyo 2020 this year?
Ooh, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, you saw like teams like Nigeria who put up a fight against the USA team who is supposed to be undefeated, nobody can touch. Australia is a really good team, even though they aren't going to be missing Liz Cambage. They still have players like Leilani Mitchell, Beck Allen, Steph Talbot. Puerto Rico, even, you saw them. They made it to the first ever America Cup final in their history. They played super well. They have really good players like Pamela Rosado, Jennifer O'Neill, Isabel Quinones. There's a lot of really, really talented teams. Even, you know, Japan and teams like Korea. Yeah, Korea has a loss, but like Jisoo Park, she plays for Las Vegas Aces. There's talent on literally every single team. France is a really good team. France always has a really good team. Obviously, you saw their men's basketball team does really well. Also, I think France in general is another country who's really growing their basketball program. It kind of makes me laugh because there was a quote I saw yesterday after Luka Doncic just destroyed for Slovenia. And he said, it's easier to score in the NBA than it is in Europe. And I think about all like the European players who play in women's Eurobasket and Euroleague all the time. And like, that's the standard for them. Like as much as the WNBA is great and it's a domestic league and a lot of Canadians and Americans want to play in the WNBA because it's close to home, like it's not the only basketball league. Basketball is huge over in Europe. There's multiple leagues. So being able to see teams like, you know, France, like Spain, they're really good basketball teams. They just don't have a lot of players in the WNBA, but that doesn't mean it's the be all and end all. I mean, don't get me wrong. I obviously love the WNBA. I cover it. It's an amazing league. It gives women a platform. It gives, you know, women a pedestal to be able to show off that they're some of the best basketball players in the world. But, you know, a lot of people don't know about EuroLeague and EuroBasket, but they're also some of the best players in the world. Even the basketball league in Australia, like a lot of the players, like Kia Nurse played for the Southside Flyers with Liz Cambage. There's a lot of good basketball being played in Australia too. We don't always see it here in Canada just because obviously the WNBA is more attainable, is a little bit more marketed towards Canada and the US because our players play there. But there's a lot of talent all over the world. I think if Canada makes it out of group play, that definitely a team like Australia would give them a run, but obviously they have to beat like Spain and Korea first.
Yes, quite remarkable the growth that the game has undergone around the globe just in the last decade or so. So $1 million question, last question we'll ask you before we let you get out of here is, Can this team reach the podium in Tokyo 2020? And if so, what color medal are you predicting for Team Canada?
I said before, I would honestly put money on it that they could get a bronze. But I, like I did say before, that this team's problem time and time again has just been when they're behind, they have a really hard time coming back. I think if they come out strong out of the gate against Spain and Korea, win those two games, make it out of group play, I think they for sure can at least get a bronze medal. I just think teams like, you know, USA, France, Australia, they have a bit more time playing together than this Canada team. They have a bit more of that chemistry. And I think that's why I don't know if Canada could reach that gold medal game. But for sure, if they make it out of group play, I know that they're going to at least get that bronze medal. If they make it to that bronze medal game, they're coming out of it with a medal. I know that for sure.
Beautiful. All right. Well, Haley, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. For those that are listening at home, though, that want to either give you a follow on social media or check out any of your articles, where are the best places to find you these days?
These days, it seems like it's everywhere. Definitely, obviously, Sportsnet, I do a lot of WNBA coverage. For FIBA, I do a lot of women's coverage. So I did a lot for the America, but I'm also doing a lot of 3x3 writing, Team USA. It's funny because I like work closely with Team Canada, but also very closely with Team USA. And if you like a double agent, but FIBA, you can find a lot of my work. There's, you know, some stuff I post just on my Twitter. My Twitter is at Goldie on Sports. I like to just tweet about stuff I'm covering if it's not like foreign outlet. Like yesterday I was watching a bit of the skateboarding that was going on. That was just unreal because it's super cool.
13-year-olds winning gold medals and all.
Yeah. I was like, not shocked. Like I was like amazed at it. I was like, that is incredible. 2 13-year-olds, gold and silver. But yeah, if you're looking for my basketball writing, Sportsnet and FIBA is the place to be. But I give a lot of commentary on my Twitter on just everything. So that's that.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again for taking the time to sit down with us. We'll let you go so you can finally catch up on some sleep, hopefully over there. And you're single-handedly raising the price of the Tim Hortons and Starbucks stock prices at this point with how much caffeine you're consuming. So best of luck with the rest of your Olympic coverage.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me.
And that's a wrap for another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. Be sure to tune in to the big debut of the Dynasty League podcast, which is kicking off next week on Tuesday, August 3rd. It's going to be the first episode. They're going to be covering all of your fantasy football needs, so be sure to check that out. Huge thank you to our sponsors over at MyBookie. Make sure to use the promo code DINESPORTS whenever you're placing any of your online wagers. And of course, to our guest, Wes Brown, for stopping by and talking all things NBA hoops there, and then Haley McGoldrick from Sportsnet for talking all things Team Canada women's basketball. Hopefully they can rebound and make a nice little charge to the podium and collect another medal, because they've got a loaded squad and hopefully they can bounce back from that disappointing early loss in the tournament. As always, if you like what you heard, like, comment, share, subscribe, various social media channels, connect with us on any of those, whatever your favorite platform is. Our handle is the same across all of them. They're all at Dine Sports. Give us a follow there. Check out our YouTube page for behind the scenes footage. Toss us a subscription there. DinesPressBox.com. Those are all the places you can find us to keep up to date in between episodes. Until next time, folks, stay safe, have fun, go Team Canada. Hopefully we can rack up some more medals between now and our next episode.